You're listening to Around Comics, episode 126.
Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic book roundtable, where twice a week you'll hear a revolving panel of guests discussing comic books and graphic novels. I'm Christopher Niesman, and the rest of the roundtable today is Mr. Brian Salazar.
Hello.
Mr. Scotty Young.
Hello.
Tom Caters.
Hola.
And Mike Norton.
Hi.
This episode of Around Comics is sponsored by
Mike's
Borders.
Behind a pillar.
Sink your teeth into the story that introduced the world to Anita Blake, Vampire Hunter. Get your copy of Guilty Pleasures by Laurel K. Hamilton at your local Borders. Borders is your home for the latest fantasy novels. Find a store near you at borderstores.com.
You see, that was the number one trade.
Yeah. Was it?
Number one.
It's not surprising.
Trade.
It's because we were pimping it.
I like the I like the mysticism.
Mysticism?
I like vampires.
I like biting shit.
Well, I don't know if you can find vampires here, but you can find plenty of comic books. And here is Around.
Quite the segue.
Horrible segues again.
You're like a gymnast of segues. Yeah.
You stuck that landing.
And that place is Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles. And Around Comics is recorded every Friday at 7 o'clock here. And it's located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please drop by. We would love to meet you.
And ignore you.
This is our first episode after Wizard World Chicago, and we'd like to thank everyone that came out to the show and introduced themselves. We had a great weekend. It was a good time had by all.
I don't remember anyone. I won't remember you ever again.
I remember Chris pouring a beer on his head or something.
You've already told that story. Thank you.
Can't tell it enough, though.
I know. It's a good story.
Well, the Monday after a convention is usually a day of recovery, travel, and emailing thank yous to all the people that you talk to. This year, however, was a little different. Last Monday, the comics world learned that we had lost one of our best and brightest creators. Mike Waringo was only 44 years old, and he died of a heart attack on Sunday. Mike, or Ringo, to those that knew him, was regarded as one of the nicest and most respected artists in comics. Today, instead of our usual news and reviews episodes, we're going to take the opportunity to spotlight the life and career of Mike Waringo. Guys, it was definitely a shock to hear this, and was definitely a cold splash of water in everyone's face on Monday. And we have two artists here that that knew Mike on a personal as well as professional level, and they're going to give some of their remembrances and thoughts on the life and work of Ringo. So, Scotty, I guess we should probably just start with you and just kind of take a look back on his amazing but all too short career.
Yeah, I mean, first just finding out the news on Monday, which I think I got up maybe 8 o'clock. So
it was pretty early.
Yeah, I mean, it was 8 o'clock when I got up. I had, you know, checked the sites, whatever, did my morning computer stuff, and got an email from Mike Norton about 8:30, somewhere around there, and I thought, what is... And he said, don't know if you've seen this yet, so I'm thinking, well, maybe a new computer thing, you know.
Right.
The iPhone 2 or something crazy like that, because I'm like, 8:30 in the morning, and it was one of those instances. I know a lot of... when I clicked the link and went to Newsarama... I know a lot of times in our lives we use the phrase, I couldn't believe it, right? I saw this thing, I couldn't believe it. But it was genuinely the first time in my life that I couldn't, right? You're reading it, you're seeing it, and there was not, like, cords were not connecting. Mm-hmm. Power cords weren't inside, and it was just going, no. I was trying to think of silly shit like this is a technical graphic design hoax being pulled on me or something. Just a weird situation, but I don't think it sunk in till later. Mike being a friend of mine, you know, a professional friend, but also just a friend on a personal level, didn't really sink in until later in the day. I think I might have actually been scrolling through my phone to call you, Sal, and scanned past his number, you know, Ringo, in my phone, and wow, you know what I mean? Like, wow. There it was. It was for real at that point for some reason. But everybody says, anybody who passes, they are the nicest guy.
Right.
And nobody ever has, obviously, anything bad to say about anybody. And I can't think of anything that I really could say bad about Mike. I mean, Mike was human, just like any of us. He had things that frustrated him, especially about comics. He loved drawing and creating so much that sometimes the direction that comics went frustrated him a tad bit. But I think in this past week, reading and hearing some of the things that people that knew him have come out and said, I mean, and definitely for me, he played that role of the older veteran in the industry that really gave encouragement to the guys coming in. I wasn't in the industry. I was only in maybe a year or two when I got my first phone call from him. I had emailed him, I think, at some point. One of my friends had said, oh, yeah, Mike was talking about your stuff. I was talking about a convention. He mentioned you, and I was, oh, that's so neat, you know. So I just went to his site, and I had checked out his blog. He's been posting, you know, sketches on his blog for a long time. And so I just emailed him basically a fan letter and said, you know, you opened the door for guys like me with your style of art and blah, blah. And at the time, I was pretty new in the industry, so I always had my phone number attached to emails that I sent out to...
Please call me.
because in my mind, I always... Because I was so young in the industry, I always hoped that I was looking for work all the time, right? Yeah. So my phone number is there in case... And that same day that I sent that email, I didn't get an email reply, but I got a phone call from him. And I was like, oh, my God. Somebody that's been around in the industry, like when I was in high school, is calling me, and not just calling, but really genuinely seems to enjoy what I'm doing, mm-hmm. And really encouraging about it. And and over the years, I didn't really think about this till this last week, but I almost can look back and map it out to almost every issue of mine for almost the last 4, maybe 5 years since I was working on maybe Venom or even the Human Torch, I think. Almost any issue that came out on stands, within a week or two, Mike would call just to say he picked up the issue and he enjoyed it. And then, you know, that would go off into whatever and just the art stuff or, whatever right. friends end up talking about off the phone. But, you know, sometimes it'd be hours and you find yourself, of course, we thought we were really deep, you know, like we knew how to fix it all, yeah. right?
You
know,
comics I got all the back. Answers.
Yeah. We can sell a million copies yeah. again if they right. just follow what we think.
Right. And, but the guy really, truly, and it seems that I'm hearing these stories, the same kind of experience that I've had with him. I'm starting to hear these stories this past week from people that I don't personally know, but seem to have had the same experience with him. It really, truly seems that he genuinely liked the younger up-and-comers, and he was always there to reach out and
encourage them
and tell them they're doing something right. Because what people don't sometimes realize because of the size of our industry is some of the old, and I'm not going to say, I don't want to generalize, but I mean, I've come into situations where some guys that have been around for a while are not that warm.
To taking their job, yeah, is how they look at it. Yeah.
To some of the up-and-comers, and it almost becomes a us-and-them type of situation, which I never look at it like that, and I've always felt it odd, but this was the first person that I met that, I mean, truly was an icon to this industry that welcomed you, and not only welcomed you, but wanted you to come in because he wanted more people to bring some fun and new flavor into the comic book world. So, I mean, for me, I mean... He was such a, you know, on a work side of things, that he played a really strong role, and always being encouraging in that way. But, I mean, just like I said, I mean, obviously you can, anybody who's known him is going to say he really was a great guy.
It's interesting to kind of see what, you know, people have said. And like, you called me that morning, and you were the one who told me that it happened. I was at home, and it was just sort of like, I never knew him, I never met him, I had never talked to him. But we had talked about, you know, maybe getting him on the show and everything, and it was just like this bizarre, unreal or surreal experience of going, that can't be, you know.
Right. Well, when I was at HeroesCon and you guys called me while recording the show.
Yeah.
After we stopped recording, I said, "Is there anybody here you want a sketch from?"
And I said,
"And you go, get me one from Ringo."
Yeah. You know,
right. And I totally brought it up to him, and he was so completely busy. But I mean, he was. Obviously, he's been on Fanboy Radio a million times. John's had him on Word Balloon, and I mentioned, "Hey, we're gonna, I've been doing this podcast with some guys here in Chicago. You want to be on?" Oh, of course, because he loves talking.
It was just an amazing. I mean. A very bizarre experience to go through, sort of, and knowing you and knowing your friendship with him, I mean, that really added to it, just knowing, I'm sure, how it affected you. And, but, you know, over the last week, just hearing from people, and people that knew him is one thing, but, I mean, he really did have an effect on a lot of fans, and maybe people that didn't even really almost follow his work so much, but knew of him. Everybody knew of him.
Well, I think Mike, the other night, at drawing night, we sat around and drew pictures inspired by or characters that he drew. We brought and kind of told stories, you know, just the same thing that, you know, I think everybody's been doing all week. And I think Mike brought up a really good, of course I'll let him share it, but he brought up something about, while maybe not being super close with the guy on a personal level, what his art meant, as opposed to what people don't realize what an artist that we look up to.
My point was, I mean, there are all these people that have... it's kind of like, you know, somebody like this passes away and you're just... and some people get confused. It's like, why am I so upset about this? Mm-hmm. And it's the same reason why somebody like a musician like Kurt Cobain or somebody is like, I never met that guy. I don't know anything about him. But you're so intimately familiar with the artwork that they've left behind that you... spend studying almost, I know personally for me, on a daily basis, that I'm actually closer to some of this man's work than I am my own family, you know, because I'm with this artwork every day. I'm trying to learn from it every day. I talk to my mom maybe once a week, that kind of thing. It's just like, you, when somebody is that close to you in a way, it's just like you can't help but be affected, even if you never knew anything about the person.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was lucky to actually meet the guy, to actually talk to the guy, to actually, you know, work on stuff with the guy. It's totally different. And I was talking to Jamar Nicholas, who does a webcomic, and he knew Mike very well. He's going actually to the memorial service this weekend, and I was telling him, it's like, I don't know how I could do it if I was like you guys and actually knew him as a friend. I'd probably be all broke down right now because, you know, I'm kind of glad I had that distance after a while. I used to tell Scotty all the time, he's like, yeah, I talked to Ringo today. I was like, God, I wish I could talk to Ringo. See, seriously, the guy that got me back into drawing comics in the 90s. I mean, I didn't read comics in the 90s. I went all through high school thinking, yeah, I'm going to do comics. Then I got into a band, and I went to college, and I was just going to do that. And I went to a comic book store, and I saw his Flash, and I was just like, oh, you can draw them like this? I thought you had to have like 1,000 lines on a page, and everybody had to be grimacing and stuff like that. And so I took that home, and I started studying. And I mean, whenever an editor or somebody, and it's happened a lot, you know, will say, yeah, your Marvel Adventures, that reminds me of Ringo. And I'm just like, well, gee, why don't you just, you know, call me the greatest person in the universe?
Right.
That's pretty much what you just did.
Right.
It puts you on cloud nine. Yeah. I don't think my stuff's anywhere near that. But it's nice to be put in the same ballpark, you know, the same city as him.
Right. Well, I think his art got caught as kind of, you know, an art out of time. And, you know, you were just saying in the 90s it was, you know, how, you know, super detailed, super hyper realistic you could be. And he had, you know, an economy of wine and had, you know, a fun, energetic style to his art.
And it had energy. And like Scotty said, he... If he hadn't done it, then there wouldn't be Umberto. There wouldn't be
There wouldn't be me.
It wouldn't be you. There wouldn't be the way that Chris Bocella draws. None of that stuff would be there because he was doing it and at a time
and
when
he did
you weren't supposed to do
and
it.
And he did it on flagship titles.
He did.
You know,
he did it on Flash and Superman.
And Superman and Spider-Man.
Spider-Man.
And, you know, these are not
FF.
These are not, you know, usually, you know, you get shoved off when you're the oddball, you get shoved off on the oddball kind
titles,
of extras,
right,
you know,
right.
And he came in and wrecked shop.
Well, as like, as far as when I first read it, I had a very odd reaction because I remember very specifically when he was doing, when he was doing The Flash, when I was, you know, I must have been... in high school at the time.
Very early high school for us.
Yeah, I mean, I had, like, a very odd reaction because at that same time, I was really good friends with this other guy who sometimes I talked about comic books with. Mm-hmm. And sort of in, like, a weird concurrence is that that same friend of mine that I sort of weirdly linked to that also died, like, at a very young age.
Right.
And when I read the thing about him dying, all like those same, I was like at work, and not necessarily because I knew Mike Ringo at all, but all of a sudden I remembered all those feelings of that other guy that like I remember talking about that stuff with, you know, about like how awesome those Flash issues were. So it was like a weird concurrence of like having things all sort of like happen at that, and I had a very odd,
it goes to show you what one man's art or one's man contribution to something that you hold dear to you, even on it, like you said, not on a super level. Maybe you didn't. Maybe even if you're a person who didn't follow his stuff, after that or whatever, there's something about that moment that if it can stir up memories of another friend who passed away. You don't realize until later how much it really meant to you. You know, until
I was trying to think of it. I mean, like Mike said, I was kind of confused this week. It's like, well, why? Because it really seemed to affect me in a strange way. Like, you know,
somebody's missing. I mean, that's...
Yeah, you know what I mean? It's like, earlier this year, I had lost my mother.
Right.
And, you know, obviously that's, you know... But then it was like, okay, well, I've never met this man. I never talked to him once, but there was something about it that, for whatever reason... But going back, you were talking about his blog. He had blogged for a long time before a lot of guys you know, really ever did. And that was a place that I went to a lot. I went to his blog
three, four
a lot.
3-4 days a week.
Right, yeah.
He updated it with a piece. Not only did he put the art up, but we mentioned earlier... He just didn't say, here's my drawing and this is how I drew it. He put up a drawing and he would write 4, 5, 6 paragraphs about how he was feeling. Maybe it didn't have anything to do with the drawing. And he would say, this is my therapy. This is my daily therapy. And he really got personal.
I think what it sort of shows is seeing people's reaction is how comic books has sort of a unique community where the fact that the people are sort of the stars aren't that far away from being the fans.
Right.
And that's why it affects so much because you can meet these people, you can read their blogs, you can understand because someone like him who's obviously a fan of the art form, you can identify with. You know, like someone like some movie star might like dies, but you know.
Right.
Feeling, because there's not that much of a difference, really, honestly, between the fan and the artist.
Mike was also an artist who would call me and say, hey, you should check out this message board. They do a weekly drawing thing, and you draw a photo. And I've been going over. I mean, here's a guy who
is that the drawing board?
The drawing board.
Yeah. He was there a lot.
He was there all the time. And you're talking about a guy who was a superstar. I mean, this guy has drawn every major character in comics, and he didn't ever see himself like that, but would be on a message board with guys that just learned how to draw a year ago.
Right.
And not at all act as if they were any different.
Mm-hmm.
And
he wasn't big-timing people.
Right. And I would never... people who know me would know I'm not the kind of person who would say that just to say it and make it. I mean, he truly was that guy. Actually, sometimes to a fault, Mike was so humble that sometimes to a fault, you actually wanted to try to remind him.
You drew,
dude. You
this,
hey, dude, people you like you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And you're pretty big.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there were really times where he had convinced himself that comics had Pat, like, he no longer fit anymore.
Just crazy because he wasn't that old of a creator.
No, like I said, it came. I mean, there's to me in life there are negative people that you can that have something, you know, that's negative from a bad place, and then there's sometimes that Mike might have some negativity to him, but it always came from a place of almost loving something so much,
yeah,
that it frustrated him that there. And in a way, comics have, at least mainstream comics, have squeezed out some of the fun. A lot of the fun.
Some of the fun.
Yeah, that's what I say, a lot of the fun. And you can almost, any conversation that I guarantee any one of his friends has had this conversation with him. Any interview you hear Mike on,
no.
Any interview you read, he will bring it up that he just wants to do fun again. If you look at Mike's telos, yeah. I mean, it really, truly was. He was a 44-year-old man that did not mind or was not embarrassed to say, I want to write some books for younger people. I want to draw some books for younger people. And obviously, if anybody did follow his blog, you can tell that the love for creating things
that
did not come from the last... I mean, we're talking 10, 8 years old. You'd see his...
Yeah.
His hand-drawn Crayola little comic books.
He was so much into doing this sort of fun thing. I had a weird moment this week when I was reading the books I picked up this week, and one of the books I read was like Booster Gold, which was a great like fun comic book that was like a high adventure comic book. And my first thought was like, oh, this is like a fun comic book, you know, in this time of like there's a character dying every week, and it immediately reminded me of Ringo, because it was like, this is just a book making fun of itself and making fun of superheroes, but also like a high adventure.
Right.
And I had a weird moment when I read that. I was like, oh, that's the type of book that, you know, fits into that ideology.
He was really getting to a point as well. I mean, there, any profession, anybody's job, you have an ideal of where you want to go and what you want to accomplish in it. And any of us that aren't feeling that we're going that path are going to feel some degree of frustration. To the point, where, you know, like recently, and I don't know even know if this is out there, or you guys knew or whatever, but he was working on the Spider-Man Fantastic Four, obviously.
Yeah.
And so we were just talking about what was up next for him, and he said, Scotty, you will never believe what I'm supposed to be working on, and not in a million years would you guess, and he was absolutely right, because it was the Punisher.
Really?
What?
Punisher story. And you know, again, we're talking about a guy who, and he just couldn't. It was hard for him
to even fathom that they
to even fathom that he, you know, because again, it's so far outside of, and I think that we have gotten to a point in this industry where you forget to try to fit people with what their strengths are, and
it sort of becomes an assembly line,
right? And that it saddened him to a degree, and. All the thing that breaks my heart the most about him passing is how much he talked about when I can just get back to the creator-owned stuff. That was the goal, right? Like, Telos was the high point of his life. The high point of his life. And he had other ideas. He had more ideas with Todd, which is best friend Todd.
They announced that they were going to do more stuff. And
big, and I think it was kind of the gear up for it. They got the big gargantuan, you know, big full size hardcover edition coming out. And so it really, I mean, it's sad in a lot of ways, and almost inspiring in some other ways, and a kind of a reminder that here's a guy who's only 44 who talked about the future.
Yeah.
When I get the chance, I can't wait to get the chance to do this. But it was a situation where he spent the last couple years thinking about when he'll be able to do it, and obviously now there's not a chance, which is, like I said, is the most heartbreaking part of it all.
Well, I think to become almost esoteric about death, about like the idea of especially with, you know, when people say, and this struck me immediately when he died, where people are always like, oh, I wish I could have gone up and talked to someone.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Really, you should. Because, yes. Like, if this is any proof of, like, the fact that you can't take anybody for granted.
No.
And,
well,
like, you need to, if you want to talk to someone right. about anything, if you're, like, an artist or a writer,
yeah.
and you want, don't be afraid to
right.
ask
and
someone
I,
something.
And I forwarded you guys a fan email that I received today. And it opened up by saying, I just wanted to email you to tell you that I'm a big fan of your work.
He had never emailed anyone
before. He had never
before,
emailed a creator before, and he said, I'm doing this because of Mike Romingo's passing. He was an artist that I looked up to and loved and never emailed
never,
and
yeah.
never walked up to at a convention, and now I'll never get the chance. So I'm doing it with you because I enjoy your work and think that, you know, but... Just like what
I
you
mean,
said, it reminds
small
you.
Everything.
Yes.
Yeah,
it
small.
Reminds you. Oh my God, there. What is holding me back? You know, and I felt that way as well. And on my blogs this week, thinking, there is no more bullshitting for me, right?
Like, well, I think you had said it on one of your posts in
your blog post.
You know, there is no more someday. Someday is today.
It's today.
I mean, it has to be because
you want to do a creator-owned project. Well, then I need to get off my fucking ass
and
just
it.
Do it. You
right.
know, and stop doing this. Because really, all I'll do is end up living the last, you know, we'll all live up the last parts of our lives, whenever it comes, hoping and wanting, when really we should just be doing.
Yeah.
You know, I'd rather go out doing. And then, but I think, like, artistically, obviously, he inspired guys like Mike. I think he inspired everybody. But at the same time, he played such a good role of the encouragement and the build-up of...
I wish I had it in front of me.
He was a steward of the medium.
Somebody had actually sent us an email or posted on our forum, and I thought I had printed it out, but I couldn't find it in my notes here. But one of the guys on our forum had actually put a post out. It said Mike Ruringo is the first guy in comics to ever make him feel like a peer.
Right.
And he was, you know, it was like he at the time when he met him, he was doing like a webcomic or something, you know, an independent little thing. And Mike treated him like, you know, an absolute equal. And it made
and it's
a
not
real
that Mike, I don't want, because I don't want people to think that Mike was this super, I'm so virtuous.
Patron
saint.
Yeah,
I'm going to go treat everybody. Mike didn't treat people because he thought it was a, he didn't treat people like they were peers because he thought that's what he should do. Mike treated people like they were peers because he truly believed them to be peers.
Right.
You don't find that often in I don't think any kind of form of entertainment industry where you get, I mean, I don't like to say comic books. I mean, the level of quote-unquote fame that comic book people get is very, very small in the scheme of the world.
Sure. It's very concentrated within, you know,
but
within fans.
But there are comic book... Some of us in comic book people, and I think we're all guilty of it at some point, we buy into our own hype at some point or another and believe a little, like, whoa. And you got to remind yourself, huh, I draw funny books, right? When I walk down the street, some dude goes, get the fuck out of the road, asshole. I'm nobody.
Get the fuck out of the road, Scotty Young.
Right. And Mike was not that guy. There was something about him that never felt, well, I drew Superman,
right?
You know, but I'll pretend I'm your peer. He was a genuine guy and thought he was your peer, and had a very uncomfortable love for his cat.
I'm not going to speak on that.
One of the things that, you know, why it was so unexpected, so out of the blue, and I don't know if folks out there know that. I mean, he was a very healthy and health oriented person.
He was 6'4", I mean, just solid as a rock, you know, 2-3 hours
vegetarian.
A day at the gym, vegetarian. I mean, this guy was no joke. I mean, when you look at him, I would say, God damn, like, that's, I hope I look like that at 40, right? Like, because just a diesel of a guy.
But I think that also fits into the sort of the nature of the shock of what, of how people felt, too.
Right.
I think that, I mean, he wasn't someone who, he's not... It's not like, you know, some 80-year-old creator who passes away where people have kind of been seeing it coming from a while. You
it's,
know?
Like, it's like when Alex Toth died. It was sad. It wasn't a shock, but it was still sad.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that fits into it because I think it affects people more deeply when you're confronted with a death in a situation where you can't figure it out, because death sort of has a... it has like a, you like to think it has like certain rules, like old people die.
Yes.
And people who are unhealthy die, and mm-hmm. people that, and that's sick. How the world works, yeah. and that's how everything works. And then when someone who isn't that way has like a freak accident, or they right. have a heart, like a heart attack out of nowhere, all of a sudden you're confronted with the idea of like there aren't rules to like how, you know, life actually works.
Right. Yeah, and your own mortality. You're sort of like.
And I think for a lot of people, definitely me. I mean, I can't speak for everybody, but for me, it's the first time. I mean, I've known people in my life who have died, even close friends that have died, but I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, high school, somewhere in high school, and maybe it's because of my age. I don't know. There's something about it doesn't register in one way, or there's something you're missing at that point. Or
I think it depends on when it like challenges what you think you are. Because right. I think him dying probably challenges people who are more adult, because he's someone obviously in your profession, whereas like a challenging thing.
Well, I think you
point and feel
well,
that.
Well, for
know.
Me, it was the first time that not only a close friend of mine had passed away, but a friend who also was it's pretentious to say a mentor, but somebody very I wish there was another word that was just short of that,
right?
That were somebody who really
somebody who
really was up here and said, don't worry, I've been through it.
He was a veteran contemporary.
Yeah, and there's something about that, I mean, there's a hole, there's something missing now, you know, so.
Yeah.
But I do think that there's another good story from Josh Middleton. He has a really good story, so I think that we should give him a call and have him tell his story.
To Josh.
Mr. Middleton.
All right, so we're calling. We just called Josh Middleton, superstar artist, of awesome books like Superman, Shazam.
You know, his birthday. You start with I haven't done anything awesome yet, really.
Five of a kind. The Batman next week coming out on Wednesday. Metamorpho.
Yeah, all over you.
I saw the preview pages, and I'm going to buy it, even though I don't give a shit about the Outsiders.
Well, that's not how I felt drawing it, but it came out all right, but thanks for that. I get that a lot for some reason. It seems like everything I do, I get more, you know, I get scolded by my quote-unquote fans, saying like, well, I really hate these characters. But, you know, he kind of made him look cool, so I'm going to buy it anyway. That's all I ever get.
That's how I said it earlier.
Yeah, he did.
He's sort of like a mopey loser accent.
Yeah.
Hey, Scotty, I like your
boy. Oh, my God, I can't believe I'm buying an Aquaman book. That's all I've heard now since then. I thought, hey, this would be fun. You know, it's crazy. It's Aquaman in the desert. You know? Just think about it. It just blew my mind as soon as they pitched it to me. Like, oh my God, how can he survive? I don't want to give anything away, but there's water under the ground. I'm sorry. Spoiler alert.
Well, I'll just read it on Wikipedia then.
Yeah.
I guess I'll wait for the trade.
I forgot. I'm not good at that. I don't talk comedy. So I talk about comic people, but I don't talk about the comics themselves that often, so I remember to do the spoiler alert. I have actually listened to your guys' show. I enjoy it quite a bit.
Deep is that water?
Yeah, I've listened to it. And I can provide a contrast to Scotty, and because, you know, he can be kind of a dynamic sort of a...
pain in the ass?
Yeah.
You guys haven't been around Josh for 5 minutes then.
Yeah, but see, I just want to say that I'm definitely a more reserved sort of puppet. I like what you fucking nerds are doing.
Cool.
I think it's great.
Thanks. Well, we'll definitely have to get you back on some other time to talk more about your work.
About us.
About how much you love us. But tonight we'd like to talk to you a little bit about the unfortunate passing of Mike Roringo.
Yes, indeed.
And you were Scotty was telling us you had
he has the other day obviously, you know, Josh and I spent some time just again, like we all have here tonight, and everybody, I think, this previous week, just kind of honor him by telling stories about him, good, bad, whatever. And and I feel that Josh told me a story that I just felt was actually a really moving story from, and again, it's going to be from an up-and-comer and kind of a new place in history. So, Josh, I'm going to go ahead and let you just kind of give us this story and anything else.
Obviously, when it's like Scotty said, when you hear news like that, obviously no one looks forward to hearing news like that about anybody, but especially, I think it was so significant. I think it hit so hard, and I'm sure a lot of folks have said the same thing. Is just because of the nature of the person that he was. He was just, I think people know that he was very unassuming and almost to a fault. He didn't take credit for much, and despite his accomplishments and despite how much of an influence he was on a lot of artists. But when when I heard the news and was talking to Scott, I didn't realize. Of course, you think back to speaking with him in the past and seeing him at shows, and it dawned on me how much more significant he was even to me coming up before I got into the business and as a pro. Tellers was out there. I kind of broke in, I guess, so to speak, in '99. I started working at Cross, as my first job, and I did a couple of shows, and I didn't know anybody. I didn't have comic book artist friends and something like that. And I have a couple now, just for the record.
His name is Scotty Young.
Yeah, Scott. Pretty much that's about it. So that's actually why I listen to your show, by the way, because I feel as if I have sort of phantom friends. I can almost talk back to. I get frustrated because I can't put in my 2 cents. But anyway.
Well, during your time of breaking in, one of your sample pieces.
Right. Was a Tellers piece. Actually, I started out Tellers. I'm a fantasy art sort of a guy. I'm not a huge superhero fan, which is why I draw Outsiders books. And it's just one of these.
An Aquaman.
You love wizards and shit.
Right. Well, I like wizards and elves and dragons. And dragon elves and wizard dragons.
Fucking dragon nerd.
You're
and
worse.
Fairies and fairy dragons and fairy princesses. Anyway, but there's not a whole lot of books out there that are any good, honestly. There's a lot of sword and sorcery stuff, but it's not terribly good. And Ringo with Tellers is one of the few, and I'm also a huge fan of animation and stuff like that. Scotty and I actually share quite a bit of the same taste when it comes to the material that we like. And that was a time where Tellers was one of those few books that came out that you could see somebody's heart was really into this, and it was mainstream in a sense, and yet it wasn't superheroes. It was just a nice all ages fantasy book, and it was sort of animated in style. And I just looked to it and thought, well, this is great. It's great that they're doing this sort of stuff, and I can't wait to see so much more of it. And of course, Tellers was there's not a whole lot of stuff even since then. So I looked up to Ringo on that level, and obviously I liked his art as well. But I never thought about actually talking to the guy or meeting or anything like that. And when I was going around looking for jobs, one of the first guys I met was Todd DeZego, who wrote Tellers, and I guess Ringo's best friend really. And we talked a bit, and I was so inspired that I thought I'm going to try and make some sample pages. And trying to get a job, and my first set of samples were Conan pages, I think. And then I went home, and I laid out this big story, and I decided to start with a big pin-up image, and I did this Tellers image, and I used screen tone. I spent all this time on this thing, and I still have it in my portfolio. And it was so fun to do, and it was so. It was a challenge to try to do those characters right. And I remember then I finally got a chance to meet Ringo. After I did that piece, I kind of put it away. I never showed it to anybody. And I actually did get a job at CrossGen, and I was doing my first show, and which CrossGen kind of brought everybody out. And I think it was Chicago was the first my first official con, sort of a professional. And
you were drawing Meridian at the time, right?
I was on Meridian, right, and which is the my first book. And they were trying to plan ahead, and eventually Meridian was going to need a fill-in issue, and it did. Of course, I quit before.
We'll have a whole show on those stories, brother.
Yeah, but I thought, man, wouldn't it be awesome to have somebody like Ringo do a fill-in, you know, but I was, it was too much to ask. I didn't, you know, I'm this nobody who was drawing, you know, just could barely draw, and Cross had their own ideas about who to get to do a fill-in in the book. They wanted to get, you know, I don't remember the artist's name, but I took it upon myself, you know, like, I just wanted to be able to talk to Ringo. I thought, well, now I'm a professional now. At least I can have the guts to maybe go up and talk to somebody. And I happened to be walking by, and he was at that show, and I went to introduce myself to him, because, you know, of course, I had already met Todd, and I did this Tellers piece. And apparently Todd, I guess I sent him a copy of the Tellers piece, and he'd showed it to Ringo, and he remembered it. And he, as I started to talk to him, I realized, I mean, it was just incredible, because he's one of these guys. You know, I had met a couple other people, but I felt like automatically I'm talking to, I mean, here's this guy who's drawn all this stuff, and he's done all these big books and all these big characters, and he was so down to earth and so unassuming and so, but I told Sky, he's just so into the art. Immediately he started talking about, oh, he knew Meridian, he had bought the book, and, you know, he was very complimenting, very encouraging to me, but he said, he started talking about the art, he started talking about, you know, drawing anatomy and asking me questions, and I was blown away. I'm sitting there thinking, my God, most pros don't, you know, they don't really give you that kind of time of day. And he just encouraged me, you know, so much, just from that, from being so open. And so I thought, well, what the hell, I'll ask him about doing the Meridian fill-in issue. I just thought, what's the worst that can happen? He could say no. And I said, you know, this is ridiculous, but would you want to do a fill-in issue on Meridian? And right away he said, sure, I'd love to. You know, it was like I was just talking like a buddy, you know. And he ended up doing it. He actually did do the fill-in issue, and I left the book, I think, right before he did that fill-in, and he drew it better than I drew it, which, so it was probably it was nice to see that. You know, he was very comfortable with that sort of genre, so he did a hell of a job, and he had a chance to design, you know, secondary characters and things. He put so much into it, just a fill-in issue, you know, and you could see how much his heart was into everything he did. So that was my first real big boost, and I really felt like I'd gotten somewhere, you know, I made it. And then over the years, I'd see him at shows and talk to him on the telephone, and he never lost that enthusiasm for the art itself, and for, you know, the passion he had for life and all that stuff. And sometimes he'd come across as, you know, sometimes he got down because he wasn't happy with the state of the industry, or because he cared so much about it. He cared about the stories, and he didn't want to draw things that his heart wasn't into. And I related to that, and I still relate to that. And I admired him for having done Tellos and for having, you know, followed that, I realized he was a kindred spirit, I guess, and that's why there's such a feeling now. When I first talked to Sky, it's strange, because, you know, you hear these stories of, you know, people passing, people, you know, and it's very difficult to move on, but I've never actually felt that sort of emptiness. There's a definite hole, and then, you know, over time, you hope that is filled in, but for now, it really feels that, you know, you feel an emptiness. There's a loss there that you know, you can't reclaim. I mean, you can look back at what he's done, and you look at his body of work, but there's only one guy. There's only one Ringo, and he's the only guy that did it. So, at his way, you know, with his heart. So it is quite a loss, not just as an artist, obviously, but just as a good human being. You know, and I think that's what's most affecting to me.
Yeah, I mean, I really, I think when Josh told me that story, and of course reading the various stuff that has been put online recently, and we've mentioned that his brother has been keeping up his blog, and
I actually went to his site to see what information was on there. I've been reading the updates on there myself.
Yeah, and you just see over and over that, I mean, what Josh's story and all the other artist stories and my story earlier of this was not a one-time guy who would pick one guy or one kind of newcomer and say, well, I'll talk to you, but not the rest. I mean, this was a guy who...
No, yeah, he was... I mentioned this the other day. It was crazy. As a hungry sort of young artist, and I still look at a lot of art myself, and I'd get on the internet and looking at, you know, different drawing, you know, websites, or the drawing board was one, and these are just, you know, artists from all over the place posting their art, and you rarely see a name you recognize, and with almost without fail, I'd see a cool piece of art. Some, you know, these young guys from Italy are posting up their comic, and I'd go and think, wow, this looks cool. And I'm scrolling through, and you see all these different, you know, posts and messages of encouragement, and nine times out of ten, there's Ringo on there, and you know, posting on there, hey, this stuff looks great, this looks awesome, and you know, and I remember reading that thing, man, that's just awesome, because you know. As much as I love the art, it is easy to get so carried and, you know, caught up in your own stuff, and you kind of settle into, this is what I do, this is, you know, this is the way I draw, this is my thing, and a lot of pros seem to lose sight of that passion for the art itself, and he never did that, and I think that's why he was so encouraging to up-and-coming artists and artists from all over the board. It wasn't for no other reason that he just loved the art. I mean, right. He genuinely loved it, and he genuinely wanted to see people go for it and do it, you know. And I think that it's, you know, sometimes it pained him to, you know, to not be able to go back and do what he was doing sometimes with Telos or his own. He loved it. You know, obviously, everybody knows he loved animals. And I took the last time I talked to him at length, he talked about he really wanted to do a book, maybe set in the an African in the savannah and with lions and all this sort of stuff, and I thought, you know, it'd be wonderful, I'm sure, because I know he'd draw the hell out of it, and he would have put everything into it.
Oh, he wanted to do an anthropomorphic book like there was nobody's business. I mean,
right.
Books like
that. Sadly, I mean, it would, I don't know, you know, that's a whole other subject, but, you know, finding a place for a book like that, it could be somewhat depressing, thinking that the market is not broad enough sometimes for wonderful material that like that. But that's, like I said, that's something that we all kind of dealt with, and but Ringo never lost his enthusiasm for it, and so finding him on message boards and seeing him on a website and his own blog and posting his own sketches out there, all while busting his ass and putting out books. You know, I'm lucky if I can put out a page a week, and you know, and he's putting out, I mean, it was a page a day, he's working these long hours, and amazing amount of energy.
Well, he was a guy that we talked about where he would, you know, he'd say things like, you know, like, comics are really hard, but, and sometimes life gets in the way. Like, sometimes you gotta leave a little room to, I don't know, you know, like, eat and stuff like that.
I remember being interviewed, it was, you know, because he had to do something with his, you know, he had to go pay a bill or something with his house, like, you know, it's like all these stupid things kept interrupting his work. I was thinking, like, eating and sleeping and having a roof over your head, and, you know, and it's just amazing. I mean, it's you know, well, that's borderline crazy talk, but that's how he lived it. You know, he really did.
What
extraordinary.
What do you think, I mean, if... As artists and doing living kind of our lives and doing the same thing that Mike did, is there anything that you think... this shocking out of nowhere thing that's happened, do you think that there's anything that you'll walk away from? I mean, has it jarred anything or reminded you of anything, or, you know what I mean? What do you think, is there anything that you can take away from this and learn from or change from?
I mean, obviously, anything happens like this, it makes you think, and because I knew him, because he was an inspiration, and it's especially jarring, but all you can do, I mean, you have to look at it, and you try to make sense of it. And of course, there's no sense in it. There's no logic. And I'm a very logical person. There's no logic attached to and something like that. And but eventually you have to try to put it in some kind of a light that you can live with and take something away. And as I was sitting there, I couldn't work that day, and then I just tried to get out of the house, and I went out with my wife, and we were having lunch, and, you know, you can't, you know, just kind of, your thoughts are just drawn to, you know, I'm just thinking about Ringo, and thinking about, it was just too hard to believe, and you could feel, like I said, that strange hollowness, but as I talked to my wife, I realized, you know, in talking about his life and the way he lived, what you take away is that it's just what he... the very first way he'd encouraged me in the first place to go for it, to draw the way I drew, and to just don't make those compromises. I try to live that, but it's very easy sometimes to get caught up and, you know, here I'm drawing an issue. I just joked about drawing an outsider's issue. There's nothing wrong with the book. It's a fine book, I'm sure. It's my heart's not in that book, honestly. And it's a job. Everyone's got to. There's no, you know, there's no shame in wanting to pay bills. But at the end of the day, this is it. You know,
right.
This is, we got one shot. This is one life. And I think, you know, I think it's important to, if your heart's not in it, then don't do it. I mean, you have to kind of believe and follow that, and ultimately, all the money in the world doesn't make up for that kind of happiness and that kind of satisfaction. I've lived the frustration of drawing books that I didn't want to draw, and I've made money doing that. And you know what? I've been a lot happy, a lot poorer drawing, you know, something, you know, drawing a fairy dragon princess
with an elf rider,
with an elf,
an elf riding a dragon with a, you know, fighting a wizard on the whatever, you know.
Don't lie, dude. You like naked 12-year-olds standing in leaves.
You know, and that's.
Will you draw my D&D characters?
I feel a little awkward. I don't want to, because it's such a, that doesn't do justice to a man. But it doesn't. It does encourage me to not give in to that, because it's obviously life is a very fragile thing, and shine, especially somebody as seemingly healthy and as Ringo was. There's you know, like I said, this is it, you know,
right.
And you have to kind of make the most of it, and that's not a bad thing. I think ultimately that's probably a good thing. There's no fear in thinking this is our one shot. That's a real good motivator to do something that's important to, you know.
Right.
I'm just really glad that Ringo did do Tellers. I'm glad he did find time to accomplish some of those things. A lot of guys don't, and a lot of guys don't have the courage, I think, to go for that. You know, because it takes time. Sometimes you have to do these things on your own time and on your own dime. And a lot of artists, I think. Think, oh, there's always tomorrow, there's next time, I'm just going to draw one more Batman book, I'm going to draw one more Outsiders, Aquaman, the Desert book, or whatever it is. And
should I not buy that?
This is really... Is there subliminally? Are you trying to tell us something?
You're really turning Tom around, brother.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it is... We keep hearing, you know, about his absolute love for the medium, but his frustration with it.
Right.
Do you think that's why he gravitated to young creators, was to, you know, to try and, you know, change the industry at a ground floor level and get these young creators?
Oh my God, yeah, I think so. I think it's because, you know, he was doing what he had to do, and he still was trying to make it, but, you know, there's strength in numbers, and we had talked about, you know, artists sit around sometimes, guys who kind of give a damn. You can have these big conversations. Scotty and I have talked about changing the world.
We've changed
lot,
it about,
you know,
10 times, I think, haven't we?
And I'm sure, and we have these brilliant, brilliant plans of how we're going to, you know. And actually, and I've included Ringo. I talked to him for like an hour or two one evening about this very subject and the future and the next generation. What do you do to encourage the positive change? Because I happen to believe. And I know that he agreed. I mean, there's room for everything. It's not what you're saying, that you have to change, turn everything on its head and eliminate something in order to allow artists to, books that are all ages or books that are Tellers type books or books, you know, to exist. Maybe the culture needs to shift to accept, you know, this animation, anything that's animated. Ringo loved animation. I loved, you know, we all love animation, but for some reason it has to be kiddie fair or so dumb only a kid would like it, you know, whereas in maybe other cultures that's not the case. And so we talked about that. I think Ringo's passion for, you know, of course he had that hope that this is something's going to blossom out of this. This is how a culture grows. If you don't have that, if you don't have guys like that,
right.
You know, that's how great things happen, you know. And you can look back at the biggest movements or accomplishments of artists throughout history, and even in comics, somebody had to have that sort of hunger, and they usually find each other. And next thing you know, you have, well, little things like Image or whatever, you know, sort of branching out that some guys had some sort of a vision for what they wanted to do. And
right,
I would have loved to see more of that happen. I think obviously
because of him.
Yeah, I mean,
and have him be a part of it, and
yeah, right. And obviously, I would have loved to have seen him be a part of it. I, as a fan and as someone who believed in that, I always sort of expected it was only a matter of time. Well,
right.
you're going to see more of that. But if there's any bright light, is I do believe he is a part of that, whether he's on this plane or not.
Right.
He's absolutely going to be a part of that, as those artists grow, because I know how much it meant to have encouragement from him. I know those guys that he posts on there. You know, when he posts, some guy, some kid puts up a drawing, or whoever puts up some picture, and a guy like Ringo posts on there, this is fantastic. You know, I saved it to my desktop or something. You know, you can't help but feel, you know, just as big as a mountain reading that, and that's enough to keep you going for another year. You know, and
yep.
He's already done an awful lot of work, and I think you'll see the fruits of that over even as time progresses. You can't take that away. He's left that mark, and there's nothing. Him not being here is a real loss, but you know, his work and all that, it already instilled in people that sort of inspiration and hope.
Right. Well, Josh, we appreciate you coming on and sharing some of your thoughts and telling
Indeed.
Us the
Thanks
story.
For having me.
And Josh, I love you.
Well, Josh, I'm just going to torrent that Outsiders.
Oh, I'm sorry, what was that?
I'm just going to download that Outsiders illegally.
Yeah, go ahead. If you want, I could actually just send you all the JPEGs without the lettering. Nothing against the writer. It's brilliantly written, but it's just that I'm actually good enough that you don't need the words. You can just kind of see.
I see why you and Scotty get along.
I don't want to be that way. It's not that I'm so great. It's just that everybody else is so bad. I don't want to. I just have to keep my ego in check there. I didn't want to, you know.
I'll just
come
tape like
being
a
fool of myself.
I'll just put a dragon in the desert with Aquaman and Metamorpho, and it'll all be fine.
I may not have drawn them, but they're there. They're invisible. Every page, Metamorpho's right. He may look like he's on a cloud of steam, but he's actually riding on the back of a dragon.
All right, man. Well, we're gonna hop off here, and we appreciate you coming on.
All right, thanks, guys. Keep up good work, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right, well, Josh, hopefully we'll get you back on under better circumstances and talk
about
yourself.
Indeed, yeah, obviously that would be nice. Thanks again, and it's nice to hear you guys doing something for Ringo's sake. I think that's a good thing.
All right, thanks, buddy.
Thank you very much, sir.
All right, thanks, bye. Man. All right, bye-bye.
So thanks, Josh. Thanks to Josh for giving us his thoughts and whatnot. But now I think we're going to give Mike Norton over here, who really has Ringo played a huge part, and I think in Mike's artistic career and just, you know, what Mike wanted to be as an artist. So I think it's appropriate to kind of hand the reins over to Mike Norton here and let him give us a little rundown of
take it away, Mike Norton.
Of what Ringo's done in the industry.
Yeah, thanks. The Mike Norton thing.
Well, I mean, Mike was an extremely large influence on just the way when I grew up, you know, reading John Romita Spider-Man, and that was my Spider-Man. I heard stories about John Romita and how he was just like this everyman, and he did his work and got in and got out. And then later on, when I was getting back into comics, there's, you know, the first thing I saw was Flash, and I thought that was pretty amazing. But it wasn't until later on in Spider-Man where I became infatuated with his Spider-Man, and he became like my modern Romita.
Right.
It's like somebody to aspire to be like, not only artistically, but like, you know,
career.
Be just very humble guy. Well, and so I really have modeled myself after the guy in a lot of ways.
Right.
Yeah. But like I said, I think
your name used to be Ted, and you actually changed it to Mike.
Yeah, I changed it to Mike so that I could be like Mike Ringo. But I think the first thing I saw of his, which wasn't too far off after he got into the business, I believe, fairly late in life, around 27, 28.
Right.
And the first
he managed a grocery store.
Really?
Yeah, he managed a grocery store for a long time.
But he did The Flash at DC, I said. And that was around 93 or 94, I believe.
And I loved those issues because it was right after Wade had been writing it for probably like about a year, but they had just finished doing sort of kind of like a sad, like, you know, the return of Barry Allen, like right. a sad storyline. Yeah. And then that sort of took a turn where Wade, you know, you could see where it led up to what yeah. Wade was doing with, like, Impulse, where it was more of, like, a fun comic book, and where right. Ringo sort of was that right
I mean,
after
yeah,
the,
I mean, it was hard not yeah. to see. I mean, the last time that I had read Flash was issue one with Baron and Geese.
Yeah.
And,
It's different, very different tone.
Yeah, exactly. And I looked at it, I was like, this is Flash. I haven't read Flash in a while. I'll look at it. And he drew a really big, bulky Flash, but he did not look like he was... I mean, he was fast. He right. looked fast. He had a shiny costume.
Yeah.
Never noticed that before, you know. And it was just... Everything about it was kinetic and energetic. And I just... I was instantly infatuated with it. I mean, it was just... You can't not be interested. And then, you know, even a character like Impulse, who I wouldn't have been interested in normally,
yeah,
became very interesting because of, you know, the story was fun and the artwork just... fit it like a glove.
Robert Ramos's stuff is just, it's where Ringo was going, just yeah. blown up.
Yeah,
more,
yeah. Umberto like, came, and Umberto definitely, I mean, the door was opened for him by Ringo, which opened the door for, you yeah. know, it's a chain of events. I mean, a chain of people opened the door for more people. I, like I said, I wouldn't
it's
be
just
here.
Like one step. It was right. like Ramos took, when Ramos did The Flash as well, and right. did Impulse, it was just that one more right. step beyond.
Yeah.
That. That was like...
It was just pretty much...
An evolution
like,
of that.
Yeah. You could almost... You could see the door open and all the new guys come through at that right. point.
You could have a character with
Mike
giant
do,
feet
Mike did Impulse
yeah, yeah.
before Umberto.
He helped create him
right.
in
yeah.
Flash.
Right.
And yep. Flash... I mean, Umberto was on Impulse from issue one.
Right. Yep. That's right. So. And the, I think the thing about Mike... that to me that stood out is that and I still think it's an issue today and something that if anything artistically that I've taken away from Mike and try to apply to my work is like on Impulse where Impulse looked like a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which
all right.
which
yeah.
to me is a very big issue in comic
not
books
just
today.
Not like the face but clothing.
Body
yeah.
and the clothing and the I mean he looked the age
you
he,
had to de-age a lot of the characters
yeah, he was
in New X-Men.
Age appropriate. Yes, and yeah, coming in a New X-Men almost keeping in mind people like Ringo and then what he did for Umberto of going, "Well, this is a 15-year-old kid. We need to remember what we looked like when we were 15. We're awkward little skinny yeah. punks. We do not have these big, bulky...
Misshapen a little bit. And like
right, yeah.
Out of
longer
proportion.
Necks
yeah.
and longer arms. And especially as a boy, I mean, you go through some weird physical...
Yeah.
You're awkward looking, you know.
And
but
your clothes are
Sal
like
says
hot.
He was never awkward.
yeah.
He was,
shut up,
he was a pimp from day one. a pimp from Jump Street. But, I think Mike on Impulse was one of those first guys that I noticed
yeah.
that, oh, wow.
But
it's
think,
a kid character.
But it's
kind of right.
weird because I think seeing what he did with that stuff and then seeing what he did with, like, the Fantastic Four, which was, like, you know, something else he worked uh-huh. on, he was such a perfect fit for that because the Fantastic Four has all these characters that are supposed to look... I mean, Mr. Fantastic's supposed to look
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
cartoony. You know, the thing is supposed to have that
right, right,
element
right.
of...
Yeah.
You know, you're not... To me, the thing isn't supposed to look like really a guy made out of rock. Whenever I see that,
right.
I'm always like, well, that's kind of lame.
Right.
I like to see the big cartoony thing that
yeah.
looks bigger than life. Or, you know, the
that's
Mr.
how Kirby
Fantastic
designed them.
Who's
right, right.
stretching all over
yeah.
the place. That's like the way those characters...
Should be viewed,
yeah,
right.
Are supposed to be viewed.
I mean, it makes sense. I mean, after Flash... I guess because of, you know, they saw him as the young character guy. I mean, they did a couple of Robin issues.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
yeah.
Which were
right.
equally awesome.
Yeah.
And did Zaga write those? I don't know who wrote those.
Maybe.
He might have, yeah. Who knows?
I'd have to look that up here.
Right? So, well, someone does on the internet. It's not like it's fucking lost
but
the time.
After that...
There's an answer.
He did... He went to Marvel, and mm-hmm. that's when he did the Rogue miniseries,
mm-hmm.
and Terry Austin inked them. And I remember it looked a little different.
It was
then.
A little different
just
there.
You know, when Terry Austin inks anything, it looks like
Terry Austin.
He has his style that he...
It took away some of that bounce to
right.
me. It took away a little bit of the
everything
bounce.
Everything was very sharp
yes.
in that miniseries. And from there, that's when I noticed him, because that's when he started Sensational.
Oh, yeah.
And he did Sensational Spider-Man for a good bit. And the only unfortunate part about that, I mean, was that he was most of that run was the Ben Reilly Spider-Man, yeah. And it was that weird clone costume. Like,
yeah. It's probably the worst time in Spider-Man history.
Yeah, but I could not read it. Right. He did a fantastic Spider-Man.
The thing I liked about his Spider-Man was, I think, McFarlane had sort of developed a style for Spider-Man for a while that, right, I think hung around with people who weren't necessarily as good at doing that style as, mm-hmm, McFarlane, sure, and people sort of got hung up on that.
Right.
And to me, when I saw the Sensational stuff, it was a different costume and all, but it was also the way he was built.
He looked like a young guy, with a big head and a little skinny body.
He sort of reset it again seeing the style. Yeah.
It's like the trade dress had changed and he pulled it back to what it was really supposed to be.
Yeah, pretty much. Exactly. And Todd DeZaga was writing those.
Yeah.
And you had a lot of crazy, fantastic stories. Doctor Strange. And
The other night at Drawing Night, we just spent the night looking.
Technomancer or whatever.
Yeah, looking through issues, and I went, all anybody has to do is go back and look at his Spider-Man issues, and you won't question anymore why he was frustrated at the direction that things have gone.
Right.
Because it was filled with magical things a fantastic world.
I think that was him hooking up with Todd and them realizing, oh, we like this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Can I read I'm flipping through the Mike Ringo Modern Masters, and it just came to a part about he was talking about Sensational Spider-Man. He said, there was so much that was fun about working on Sensational. It was a great time. The frustrating parts for me would be having to curtail what we wanted to do with the book to have to conform to the several crossover stories that had to run through all the Spider-Man titles. Although we ended up ultimately enjoying the stories we crafted within the parameters set for those stunts, it was still a little frustrating to have subject matter foisted on us that we had to fit into the book, but that sort of tripped up the momentum that we would be building with the stories we were doing. Everything would have to be dropped for these crossovers. Other than those speed bumps, though, Ralph was very hands-on, Ralph Macchio, and let us do whatever struck our fancy on Sensational, which made for a very fun working atmosphere.
That would happen again later on when we came back to Spider-Man.
And I think that was the breaking point of that was the crossover that he was talking about, was where Spider-Man split into like four characters. That's where I think Ricochet.
That was the thing about it, was when, I'd seen him on Flash and I'd seen his Spider-Man. I was like, wow, this is awesome. And then they do this where Spider-Man's not even in the book anymore. It's Ricochet and Hornet and all these other guys.
Ben Reilly.
As we keep talking more and more about him, there are two words that keep coming up to describe him, and it's fun and frustrated.
Yeah. But frustrated because he wanted to have more fun.
I think that's pretty apropos.
Yeah.
Well, was it after Spider-Man he started working on Fantastic Four?
No. He started Telos after.
He left Telos. There's two trades two trade paperbacks.
And they're coming out with another collection.
Yeah, it's called the Gargantuan. Yeah. Even the name of his trade fits. If anybody's read Telos, it's definitely a kid's story, and it's a fantasy book, and I mean it's frog soldiers and anthropomorphic characters, and there's a lot of fun there. So even the name of their big, instead of the Omnibus or the Absolute, it's the Gargantuan or whatever, and that ran, I think, somewhere it'd be like 12.
I think it was 12.
Somewhere around 12, and there was some. They had.
I want to say 10 to 12.
I was pretty sure it was 12 issues.
Yeah, there were other stories.
Yeah, he had a lot of. There was a prologue a couple years back.
Yeah.
They also put out a little.
Yeah.
An extra little story thing with a new little story and I think some pinups.
I think the new one that's coming out is supposed to have
some extra stuff.
Everything. Supposed to be
right.
And what people do and that lived even longer. It lived a longer life than what even the American audience might have known.
Yeah.
In that it was very, very big in Europe spent a lot of time in print there, and the printing there was beautiful, and I mean, it was really an exciting time for him, but I think that, and he would say this all the time, that he felt that he got in right at the end of the big boom, right? He felt like, God damn it.
I missed it.
Like, literally, the door just shut right when they were doing it. But, I mean, Telos was still very successful for a creator-owned book. Much more, I mean, the books, the creator-owned books that we see as successful today, Telos was still outdoing those, yeah. even for that time that seemed to be unsuccessful.
Yeah.
Compared to today's market, I mean, in you know, relative to today's market, it was very successful for a creator-owned book. And he definitely, they definitely had a benefit because they filled a hole that, that another kind of artistic superstar left, which was Joe Madureira came in and gave Battle Chasers, which was loved and really, really successful, but never came out, and there was very big gaps. And then it kind of fell off.
The weird thing with Telos is I think it was sort of ahead of its time in a way because it was like a creator-owned work that didn't fit, I think, a lot of, at that time, what people were, a lot of the creator-owned stuff or whatever, the independent stuff was still sort of trying to work its way out of the shared universe idea and all that. And
If you weren't into some other mediums like video games at the time, the one thing that I think helped Telos and made it the successful book that it was at its time was, A, it filled a hole for the people that were lacking. People were missing Battle Chasers. They wanted Battle Chasers, and it wasn't coming out. And so Mike and Todd, not because of Battle Chasers, this was because of another thing, but it just happened to slide in at a time where this other fell off.
Concurrently where it,
so people had another fantasy-style book to latch onto. And what people might forget about that time is the highest-selling game and the biggest phenomenon of that time was when the PlayStation first came out and Final Fantasy VII came out, which was a revolutionary video game. There was no game before that that was like that, and the scenery and the storytelling in that world. You could jump from this world. So, and me, I was a comic book fan, but I also played this game, which blew my mind. So, after finishing that game, I felt, because the game took you 2 months to play, 72 hours.
That was the last game like that I ever played.
And as soon as I finished it, all I wanted was
more. Where's the story?
I need something else that has dragons and animals that talk and stuff like that. And I had, you know, there was Telos there for me. So for me, being, you know, I'm a little bit younger than Mike, who Mike got in with the Flash or the Spider-Man stuff. That happened just a little bit before me. Mine was Telos.
Well, I mean, and for me, because I'm about the same age you are, I remember at the time I wasn't reading any other... I read, like, the big two stuff. Telos is one of the things I'd, you know, read outside of that.
Right.
And for people who don't know, you know, that Telos exists, which I'm sure there's tons of people now...
That are discovering it.
Yeah, that you should pick it up, because it is really, like, a real pure distillation of his, like, mentality about fun and about character design and about... You know, how things should look and how a universe should look and how a universe should work.
They created a world from scratch.
Yeah.
There was nothing.
World building.
They built a world. And I believe there might be maps.
A couple of little things about Telos in here. I just wanted to say the interviewer, and I'm not sure who the interviewer is, but it seems like it's someone.
The magical George Corey.
He worked with.
It's that book's by Todd DeZago Eric Nolan. George Corey.
Okay.
Something.
The interviewer asked him where the name Telos came from, and he said the name Telos, if I remember correctly, was a play on the words "tell us," as in "tell us a story." And so the magical fantasy realm of Telos came from Telos. I know it's kind of silly, but despite what Eric Larson thinks, I still think it's a pretty cool name.
Right. See, I told you. Mike, he was not afraid of just saying shit, right? And just putting it out like that. Despite what that guy thought, you know, and Eric Larson's no small fry.
Right.
Despite what he thought, it's fucking cool.
Well, and then the other thing, one other thing I just want to say later on, he said... I can't think of anything else I'd rather work on than Telos. It's my baby, and who doesn't want to lavish love and attention onto their baby? Right.
Well, Todd shared with me, and this is something that I don't think Mike ever mentioned to me. If he did, it must not have stuck with me. But speaking with Todd this week, I did a little painting this week, a tribute painting for when I heard the news, and a little Telos piece with the two main characters, Kaj and Jarek, and I sent it over to Todd. I the co-creator of the book and thought that he might like it, and Mike's best friend. And something that I found out was Kaj and Jarek are Todd and Mike.
Oh, no kidding.
The characters. And when I heard that, the question in my mind.
It all made sense.
Kaj is Mike.
Yeah.
And Jarek would be Todd. You know what I mean? Like, all of a sudden, like, oh, wow.
Why did I never see that before?
And if you look at the, if you read the book, I mean, it is this, it is a buddy book. These two love each other. They are friends. They are characters that are bonded together. By thy side is, I mean, and you'll probably see that online for the next week, you know, the weeks to come of that was their call to each other, like, whatever, wherever you're going, I'm by thy side. And even the speech, I mean, it was a throwback to old school storytelling and storytelling for tell us what you just said. It was a throwback to those days of being able to tell stories without having to feel like this has to be real.
Yeah.
And you gotta, you know, you could just read it.
Tell
a
story.
You could walk away from it and be just with a smile and just have a little fun with it, you know. So,
which is
and then after Telos is when
that's when he went to Superman.
Superman.
That's when and you know, as big and popular as Ed McGuinness became on Superman and Batman and stuff, you can't look at his stuff and go, oh yeah, I've seen Mike Waringo do this. You
right.
know, it's just like he's done this. He did this in, you know, and then was it late 90s?
Late
90s, 2000.
Yeah.
And
2001.
And those were, I mean, it was a big, it looked like Superman. I mean, it's just like, he was working on books that you're looking at, it's like, yeah, he's the perfect guy for this.
It was like the old Fleischer Superman cartoons.
In
right?
a way,
know,
it was
Superman
a big,
yeah, like, this guy, right?
Yeah, that
like
is how Superman.
He was a big, muscular Superman, but he looked friendly. He was just, it was, there was nothing scary about the guy, and he fought big,
it was,
giant
and it wasn't
alien
the
monsters.
It's not the ripped
carved.
Super.
Yeah.
It's not the ripped Super. It's like the big guy.
The contour. It's like I said, the Fleischer. Just
it's the dad Superman.
Yeah. Right.
It's the, like, how people sort of imagine, like.
Like your dad's strong, but you don't wash your clothes on your
ripped.
Dad's stomach.
Yeah. Yeah, but he's like, I'll show up and I'll fuck shit up because. That's what I do.
If I may, boys, that the irony is, though, that his art didn't fit the story, because that was a heavy story. That was during Our Worlds at War.
Right.
Yep. And he inadvertently kind of stepped into the 9/11 world, because remember that cover that came out that week of 9/11?
Right.
There was
before.
Obviously.
He had worked on it before.
Yeah, obviously Mike drew it months before, but it was the Lex Towers, the LexCorp Towers coming down in Our Worlds at War. And obviously everyone made the correlation to 9/11, and, you know, it was something that I know he was embarrassed by.
Right.
That came up in our conversation. And also, just again, it was a story that was ill-suited, because you're right, he had the happy Superman, but it was during Our Worlds at War, which was not a happy time.
Yeah, when you see Mike's
Superman,
ladies
and gentlemen,
the
ghost of John Suntress, by the way.
When you see Mike Superman, all I could think about was the old Fleischer cartoons of flying in the big
I'm gonna go
robot,
fight a fucking robot.
And I'm gonna fight a robot, and then the scientist that is inside pulling the little 1950 style levers.
Yeah. But Superman.
We've got a few forum posts. We'll go over some of those.
Sure.
We were done. We didn't get to his Fantastic
Four. Fantastic
Four.
Oh,
Fantastic Four.
I was chomping at the bit.
That's what he went on next. That's
I loved his wave.
And how long was... Because there was the weird bump in the road where he was on there for a while, and I can't recall how long it was, but there was that weird...
He was on there a fairly good clip, and then he was gone
couple
because
years,
of
like
the whole...
Two,
no, it wasn't even... I thought it was within the first two arcs, or only after the first two arcs,
where
all of a sudden...
Wade left...
Well, they were on it for a total of over... Right. Like, they were on it
Oh, yeah,
like
ultimately.
Two,
yeah, it was, like, ultimately 2 years.
They got the bump after, like, the second arc, I think.
Jemis got it into his head that he wanted the story idea that the Fantastic Four would be poor.
Poor, and take
Wade's
it to that
like,
real place.
And Wade's like, that makes no sense. Reed Richards is a genius. And you don't want to have that kind of silly comic book argument, but, I mean, it doesn't really make sense.
Right.
So instead of, you know, capitulating, I guess Wade tried to work it in a little bit, but not to Jemis' satisfaction. He said, all right, well, we're going to go another way, and they were dismissed.
Well, no, Wade was dismissed, and Mike left. To support Wade.
And that was the coolest thing, because
people
don't really hear about that happening a lot.
And people don't understand that as a freelance artist, this was pre-exclusive.
Yeah. Right.
The exclusives didn't exist at this time. For Mike as a freelance artist, to walk away from his job. I mean,
or, and you know, say I'm going to walk away if he walks away.
I'm going to walk away and follow him out of, you know, protest and loyalty to my beliefs. I mean, we've talked a lot tonight about what Mike thought about comics, and like Mike Norton just said, you forget that that happened, and he walked away because of his beliefs and what his friend believed and what he believed. And it's a scary thing to walk away from your living, because we all know the comic book industry is not a thriving situation. Well, there's not a guarantee you're going to go grab something else.
For for the how long did they spend on total eventually? Like 2 years?
Yeah, it was around 2 years. Around
they were there gone for almost like 8 months or something like that.
And then they came back, and I love
because of fans.
Yeah, because.
Here, let me. There were moments where the internet was.
There was something I wanted to read here again about this point. He said the then publisher at Marvel, Bill Jamis, decided that he wanted another direction for the FF book, even though what Mark Waid was doing was very popular. Mark had no interest in that, so Jamis decided he'd remove him from the title and install a writer that he'd found from the theater biz to take over. I read the first script and had no interest in this new direction. It just didn't make any sense, so I decided to leave the book as well as a way of supporting Mark, really. I started talking to the folks at DC about working with Mark on the Legion of Superheroes title he was going to start writing, but they were reticent to offer me a contract, which is what I wanted. By the time they finally came through with a contract offer, I had committed to FF editor Tom Brevoort that I'd draw two transition issues of FF written by someone other than Mark for the new writer as a bridge to the new direction. That kind of soured the folks at DC on me, so they pulled the contract. They didn't want me to do those two issues, but I'd promised Tom I would, and I didn't want to break a promise. Fortunately, Marvel made up the loss of the contract at DC by offering me one with them. In the meantime, Jamis changed his plans and decided to launch his FF idea as a totally new book, and Mark was reinstated as writer on the main FF comic. And so we were back to work with a several-month blip for me, but Mark never lost a step in the whole debacle. So, yeah, I mean, it just goes to show that it was he didn't have any contract. He didn't have, you know, didn't know what was coming next. But because he didn't believe in what they were doing, he was willing to walk away from it. And luckily it worked out that, you know, he was able to come back.
But I think, I mean, that for Mike played a part in losing some of the faith you have in. We all talk about on the professional side that a little bit of your bubble gets burst from time to time.
Yeah.
But that is that played a little bit of a role in going.
That had to hurt a little bit, only because also it wasn't like people liked what was going on.
Yeah.
It was like
people
such a
loved what was going on.
It was such like a kick in the balls because it was like this guy decides he doesn't. Yeah, this guy who
let's change for the sake of change.
Well, yeah. they chose that team of Waid and Rainbow and had a 9-cent introductory issue because it was like no, this is going to bring the FF to where they should be.
Right.
And if you see the films, it really is the template of what they wanted in the films. It was the family, and it was the importance of the family. And one of the best stories of the run, to me, was when the Thing died, and they stormed heaven.
Yeah.
Like and it was just
story,
what a wonderful story.
Yeah, and that is I love that story. That's one of my favorite.
That's the one where it's Kirby's God.
Right. They, they find the creator, and it turns out that it's Kirby's workshop where he was drawing and stuff. And there are wonderful pictures that Mike got of Kirby's studio to make it as authentic as possible.
Yeah. That was pretty much the bulk of his work and everything. But
they went on to Spider-Man again.
Yeah, Sensational. He did.
Friendly Neighborhood, actually.
Friendly neighborhood.
Right, yeah.
But I just wanted to read this last part of this interview with him. It said he was asked any final thoughts. He said, "Well, I suppose I'd end with the thought that I wish the industry and its fan base would be a bit more willing to embrace more diversity in both subject matter, genre, as well as art styles. I'm a huge fan of the European comics market, where it seems like anything and everything goes. There are folks with very cartoony / animated styles that work on serious dark material. There's a huge market there for comedy and humor material. There's a huge market for fantasy and science fiction. You know as well as I do from our trip to France back in 1999, or was it 2000, how amazing and pervasive the comics industry is over there. I suppose it's a form of envy, but I really wish we had more of a taste of what they have there over here in the States. Good stories are good stories, and good art is good art. I think there's room for everything and enjoyment to be had for all in diversity. Long underwear shouldn't necessarily be king."
And it's right. I mean, You know what? I don't think.
I think that sums up everything we've been talking about. We had some great forum posts, but I think that is a great place to stop.
We do want to thank everybody for that did write
in. Yeah, and go check out the forum from this week. We had some really well thought, very sincere posts from people that really just their remembrances of his work and what it meant to them as comic fans, and just the joy that his art brought to a lot of people. So if you're interested, go to the forum and check that out. It's definitely worthwhile. Some fellow artists, I know Mike Jumbluth, who's taken a lot of inspiration from him, had a nice post there, and some other folks.
Yeah, there was just a ton of people and on forums everywhere, and just about everyone who said anything about the guy, it's been a lot of what we've been talking about. Right. Just, you know, how much he's meant to people, whether they knew him or didn't, you know, just from a fan perspective. I mean, he obviously meant a lot to a lot of different people, and will certainly be missed for a long time. So.
We'll miss you, buddy.
Yeah. All right, well, let's go ahead and wrap this episode up.
All right, see you later.
Oh, it's come back on Thursday for another regular episode of Around Comics. We're going to have a nice chat with Greg Rucka, and we'll get back on to our regular shows at that point. But until then, I just want to wish everyone a good week, and we'll be back then. Sal, Scotty, Tom, Mike, and Mr. Suntress, everyone, thank you very much. Have a great week, and we'll see you on Thursday.
Yep.
Bye.
If you would like to suggest a topic, send us your comments, or are interested in becoming a panel member, email us at info@aroundcomics.com. or visit the Contact Us section of our website. Music for the show provided by the Podshow Podsafe Music Network. Music.podshow.com. Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and do not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next time when the panel will change, but our mission will stay the same, bringing you the very best news, reviews, and opinions in and around comics. Around Comics is a Pipe Dream production. Copyright 2007. All rights reserved. Love you, baby. Yeah. Why you got my love and left me alone? Why you got my left alone? I know that you don't love me. Oh, baby. Baby, love you one more time.